For December the 11th, 2020, we talk about We the Revolution, Rock Band 4, and we ask you about important games and important moments. Welcome to Level 352. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm David Meismith.
I'm Jella Prendes.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Gonna give a blanket kind of thing here at the top. Our usual recording setup is not working. The service that we use is on the blink. So I'm going to do my best to set the levels for everybody, but understand things might sound a little bit different this time. Caveats over. Welcome.
Yeah.
Welcome back, Jala. It's been the longest since you've been here.
Yeah. So, there's been the usual kind of stress levels in my life, but I do have one fun thing to share. So I finished up the final recording for the last choreography that I was working on dancing wise, and I have started getting the costume pieces for a pole dance piece that I'm going to finish up that was from a workshop I did back in October for a song called Monster Under My Bed. And for this choreography, I'm going to be dressed as Melina from Mortal Kombat. So I posted just like a real quick, I threw the costume and the wig on without doing anything fancy, just to see like if it fit. Mm-hmm. And threw that up there. It's on my Twitter and it's also on my dance Instagram. So that is a thing. Also, another fun thing for me anyway, is that I hit a new PR on squats for the first time since like August, because I had an injury. I hyperextended my wrist and it made me kind of paranoid about doing, you know, a lot of stuff for a while. So it kind of set me back on like all of my lifting, you know, cause your wrist is sort of important for that. So, I've been nursing it back to health and working on it. And, I finally hit a new PR on my squats. So that made me happy because, you know, I finally got there at the end of the year. Yay.
Nice. So. Good recovery.
Yeah. That's all. That's all I got.
Cool. Cool.
How about you guys?
Yeah. David, how about you?
Not too much. Just kind of bobbing and weaving.
Of course.
I got nothing this week. I mean, I'm trapped in the time anomaly known as, 2020. So.
Yeah. No, I have very little that I can talk about. I got new shelves and I've been putting stuff up, but that's about it. Is new shelves and trying not to get eaten alive by my kitten, you know.
Yeah.
Dude, man, she loves taking bites out of me when I'm trying to work. But
you're the stand-in teething toy.
Yeah, she doesn't really like the teething toys very much.
You're a lot more fun because you move.
Yeah, I do. I do move. Although I do. They say you shouldn't pull your hand away because that just convinces them it's a game. So I hold still. Yeah. Dottie doesn't get the message. She just keeps on like biting and licking more. So, you know, we'll see.
Are you sure this advice wasn't written by a cat?
It did seem like it was a bunch of cats who were all in a trench coat. Yeah. Standing on each other. But I didn't want to be rude and ask, questions. So
that's reasonable.
Yeah. Ben, how about you?
I also have not much to talk about. I cleaned my apartment over the weekend.
Oh, I thought you were going to say I also met a cat in a trench coat.
No, I did not, sadly. But I am looking at pictures of Dennis's newborn child right now and kind of laughing to myself because the baby looks a lot like Dennis. So just, that's funny.
Yeah, no. So I was looking for photos so I could mention anything. I guess they're keeping those private.
No, there's one on the level.
Is there? Level, oh,
yeah.
Level darn. Yeah.
I didn't say anything about it, mostly because I was like, maybe we're not saying anything about it so he can come on the air and say, yay, my baby is born.
Yeah.
I don't know.
let's leave it for him to do the grand the grand announcement when he comes back on. But if you want to see a very cute photo right. of that.
I'll just undercut it and say that my cousin had a child recently. So
oh, cool.
I'm excited to be a first cousin.
Nice. Yeah. Anybody I know?
Yeah. I don't know. How well do you know anybody, really? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Oh, we all wear masks.
Well,
that's a good thing. You should in 2020. Yeah.
I suppose. Shit. Yeah. No, it's good. Everybody should. If we did a while ago, a lot of this would be really different. But anyway, I mean, if this can be a short intro, that's fine. I want to let people know, since the last time we recorded, we have settled on a date for Duckstream. So not this weekend, but next, the weekend of 18th, 19th, and 20th. Is going to be a 48-hour stream. Go to duckfeed.tv/duckstream or go to twitch.tv/duckfeed to watch that live. It'll be a good time. I'll be playing a game. We're going to be hanging out in chat. There will be some blocks on Sunday where I get relieved, which is always good because I can sleep more.
sleeping
is a novelty. Yeah, we're doing it different. Instead of the full 24-hour shift, we're doing
12s.
Yeah, we're doing 2 12s. We're doing 12 on, 12 off, and that is infinitely more doable because having 12 hours off means that I can like get 8 hours of sleep, which is fun, and like make dinner and stuff like that. So
yeah, you could get 12 hours of sleep.
Damn. I mean, I could get 13 hours. No, can't do that. No. Yeah.
I'm hoping this evolves into 4 sixes and then like 8 threes and then
one on, one off. Yeah. No,
yeah.
Then you guys can finish one another's sandwiches.
Yep. Next weekend, go ahead and do that. But that's next weekend. This week is the regular kind of show with the, you know, the grind, the multiplayer, and the end boss. And why don't we get started with
the grind?
The grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. Jala, I will throw to you.
Okay, so I played a few things since the last time I was on. I actually kind of forgot about the first two because they're just really light. Well, I say they're light. One of them is light and the other one is really, really complex, but I haven't dipped my toe in too far because I got distracted.
I'm really curious about the complex one.
I'll leave that for last because that one will probably generate the most conversation. So the first thing I'll talk about is Kukiyomi Consider It, which is a game released in December 2019 by Gmode. I have it on Switch, but it's also on mobile and Steam.
I've played this.
I've
played this and I meant to bring it, but then I just didn't. So I guess it was too slight for me too. Yeah, no, right? This is like a little WarioWare kind of thing, right?
It is like a smaller, cheaper WarioWare that's basically built around thoughtfulness. You're presented with a bunch of different scenarios and your goal is to respond to the situations in the most considerate manner possible. And the mechanic is that you move a red object on the screen in response to the situation. Usually it's yourself, but sometimes it's something else or someone else. An example is that you might be sitting down on a train and a group comes in. You stand up and then let them sit down in the chairs. This is a very Japanese game, as you might imagine from the title. So some scenarios that have the intended response that might seem a little bit weird to a Western audience, it's probably just a culture thing. But there's also a lot of humor in it. Like you might have a scenario when, for example, you're on a comedy show and there's a stuntman poised over a steaming bath telling you not to push him and his butt is facing you and you're supposed to push him in because you're on a comedy show and that's what the polite thing is to do. But like, it's very silly looking the way that it's drawn. I will link in the chat an image of said stuntman. It is pretty good. With his butt facing you.
Oh,
and it's a stuntman on his butt.
Yeah.
Yes, he's presenting his butt to you. There are also two other modes that I did not mess around with. There's a co-op mode, so you can co-op this with somebody. And then there's inconsiderate mode. So you get to
where this launches Untitled Goose Game.
Right. So also this there's a screenshot just for Cole of one of the scenarios.
It's it's like a bunch of, what is that supposed to be? Is that supposed to be like a gang or
like donkeys and such. And you're like posing with them for a photo and you have to like squat your little dude down and it says YOLO at the top.
Yeah.
Cool. See,
I feel like this sounds, I don't know, this whole like present a social situation and what's the most considerate thing? This sounds like an anxiety simulator.
So this reminds me, you guys have heard me talk about Hidden My Game by Mom or Mom Hid My Game.
Yes.
Yeah, it's really similar. It's like in a similar vein to that.
Yeah, it's where, drawn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or it's like McPixel or something like that. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, like Joel was saying, like this is done in more of like a, I have no idea what the style is. To me, it just reads like cute manga style.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that is the first thing that I played a bit of. I did not finish all of the scenarios or anything, but I did play it for a little bit, and it was pretty entertaining for the bit that I played it, just kind of like a relaxing game. Any questions about Kukiyomi? Consider it.
How do you inconsiderately pose with the gang?
I don't know what the inconsiderate mode is.
Call the cops.
Yeah, like I guess the inconsiderate thing would be to remain standing and not squat with them, even though everybody else is squatting.
But by not conforming, you have proven yourself to be the most rebellious of them all.
No, because now you're going into a totally Western sense of.
This is true. Okay. So, no, I didn't mean to be insensitive. Yeah.
So that's that game. Moving right along, I will skip over the other game that was complicated that I did not dip my toe in super far into, so I haven't seen all the mechanics firsthand. I will talk about instead the thing that distracted me, Pokemon Sword.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
Not just for Luke and Milo anymore.
I don't know why I suddenly was like, I need to play a Pokemon game, like now. But I guess I just decided it was time, and probably with all the stress of family illness and things like that. And so I have played over 35 hours of the Pocketmon, and I have only beaten the first gym because all I am doing is walking around, exploring, and getting Pocketmon. And that's it. I have about 100 of them.
Wow. See,
in this more progressive era, I think we need pocket people.
Yes, they can be pocket people. But you see, here, okay, the reason I am not calling them Pokemon is because, like, in the leveled chat on Slack, I said I was playing Pokemon, and then somebody was like, gotta get them Mons. Oh, yeah, those Mons. And I was like, Mons is a totally different thing, and I am never going to call them Mons ever.
That's a part of a pelvis. Yeah.
That is a part of a pelvis, and we're not going to the no-no zone here. This is the Pocketmon. So that is why I've called them that, but they can be pocket people.
Yes.
So,
I mean, to be fair, the internet disagrees, but...
I figured that you picked up Pokemon Sword because we had the argument about what the best starter was.
Oh, we did, didn't we? That might have been what triggered it, because we were talking about it. And then there was a sale because Black Friday happened.
Of course,
Was it an argument? I thought it was like pretty confirmative that Charizard was the best one, right? It was three against two.
I mean,
majority rules, right? We're in a democracy, right?
Go ahead.
That doesn't mean you're right, because I mean, we could say that, well, they're the majority for the past 4 years hasn't been right about, you know, a lot of things.
Yeah,
that's a good point.
Yeah, that's why I just appeal to science.
What we've learned is democracy is a joke, but it wasn't. I mean, like, we never tried to arrive at a consensus. It wasn't like, hey, we're trying to pick the level's mascot, which is it going to be Bulbasaur or Charmander? We were just saying what we all thought. You know, just like
well, I mean, consensus implies that there's multiple options, where clearly it's, you know, Charizard is the only option.
Apparently Squirtle's not an option.
No.
Absolutely not.
No. I mean, why would
maybe
he be?
We can unite in our hatred. What about that?
Yeah.
I mean, did we discuss the fact that Squirtle needed sunglasses to be cool?
No, we didn't.
He was not cool with sunglasses, okay?
Yeah, they were pretty bad sunglasses. They were all pointy. No, I mean, like, to put it another way, I'm not going to stop liking Dishonored just because Jala is the only person on the show who agrees with me that those games are good.
Right? See, Cole is on the side of right here. But yeah. Anyway, so anyway, I used the grass Pokemon, and I named him Bulbasaur. And my Bulbasaur is also Bulbasaur.
Right. That has to be confusing.
But actually, my favorite Pokemon from the originals, if you were to ask me like what my absolute favorite one is, not because it's like baller in the game necessarily, but just because I like its design, is Abra. Abra is my favorite Pokemon.
Yeah. Dude, big ups on that. I agree.
Yeah. Abra's good.
Yay. Okay.
So, you see the whole thing with, I think it's Kadabra, like some guy sued Pokemon? And...
Yeah.
Yuri Geller is the name of the psychic who sued Pokemon because his whole, like, he is the guy who claims that he uses psychokinesis to bend spoons, and Kadabra has bent spoons as part of his design. That was a long time ago.
Apparently, his, in like the Japanese version, the character's name is literally like,
Urgeller or something. Yeah.
Yeah. Something like that.
Yeah. Or that, like, that just reminds me of, did any of you play Neopets?
Yeah.
Yeah. In the early days of Neopets, they had a pet, like, you know, like a monster, just a Pokemon Macy. Knockoff. Yeah. One of them was just Macy Gray. It was just a drawing of the R&B artist Macy Gray.
What?
Yeah. And they had to change it because, like, at, like, once Neopets got popular, because, like, oh, we can't. Just, you know, it's probably not good for us to do that. So
about the game, though, about the only thing I can say about it that isn't, hey, it's Pokemon, is that folks seem to like some of the names of my critters. Like, I named my Slowpoke Dave for reasons. And so he's Slowpoke. I am endeavoring to eventually evolve him into Slowbro, because Slowbro has a gun arm and that's pretty cool. Meowth is Greta, Purloin is Dottie.
Cool.
So some of them are named after critters I follow on the internet. Like, there's a Juniper Fox. There is a Pepper who is named after an African gray that I follow. But like Ninetales is Naruto, and Snover is Freezemeister. And so on and so forth. Like, I named them different stuff. Applin is Krabappel, after Mrs. Krabappel.
So, wait, that's how you pronounce it? I've been calling her Crandall. That's a joke from the show.
Yes.
That's,
yes. So Scraggy is middle manager, because Scraggy is like this little lizard dude with very alarmed eyes who has like what looks to be a tie, and he's holding on to little pants.
Mm-hmm.
And he just looks very alarmed and small and weird. And so like I just called him middle manager. Nice. Magikarp, who is now Gyarados, is Vegeta. I have a Monokuma. So they're named all different kinds of stuff. Vanillite, which looks like a you know, ice cream cone, is Dairy Queen.
Cool.
So anyway,
prior to this, what was the most recent Pokemon game that you'd played?
I don't remember.
No,
I don't know. I know I played, like, it's been a long time. Like, I know I played Pokemon Puzzle League. I know I played Pokemon Stadium. I don't remember if I played anything after that. So it might have been like the longest time since I played a Pokemon game. Mm. And those weren't even like the way that Pokemon games are. Those are like, you know, spin-offs.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know.
I looked up Scraggy, and I love that the Pokemon is apparently just the like congealed anxiety of boomers about people wearing baggy pants.
Yeah, pretty much. It's middle manager, I'm telling you. That's the name of it. Oh, and then the other thing is that Dave also picked up Pokemon Shield, and we have done a few little raids together, and every once in a while, like, we'll, you know, have a powwow and trade, and then we mildly upset each other with the names of each other's Pokemon. Like, I disapprove greatly about most of the names that he picks, and he disapproves greatly of most of the names that I pick for mine. And so we just mildly upset each other with whatever we call them.
Well, yeah, I mean, what's the purpose of naming a living creature if it's not to troll somebody? Yeah.
So that's my experience so far in Pokemon Sword. I have gotten to the place where the next gym is. I am just wandering around doing other stuff. And I also have the expansion packs. So I've been wandering around the island, Isle of Armor, also doing the exact same thing, just catching stuff.
Nice. So, I'm surprised that much real estate is available to you. Without having beaten more gyms. Like, at some point, is there an especially tough teen standing in the way, or is it literally just you can go wherever, you just have to clear the gyms in a particular order?
Well, you can only capture Pokemon of a certain level until you beat the gym. And so after you beat the gym, then that level that you like, until you beat the first gym, you can only capture up to level 20 Pokemon. And then when you beat the first gym, you can capture up to, I think it's level 25, and so on and so forth. So, one thing about it is that on the expansion pack, there is a whole bunch of real estate that you can go to. And because, originally the expansion pack, packs were supposed to be played after the end of the main game, but they adjusted it to where you can get to it from the beginning of the game. And so the levels of everything on those two different islands that you can go to are adjusted so that you can play it at whatever level you start the game at.
Oh, cool.
So that means there's double the amount of Pokemon that I can go, or triple the amount, actually, if I were to go to the other place, which I have not even touched the other expansion island. But I could be theoretically playing 100 something hours of this game and not have beaten the second gym yet. Because yeah. I also level up all of my Pokemon at the same, all the ones I want to keep, I am leveling up consistently. So they are all leveling and, you know, getting stronger together so I can use any one of them.
Yeah.
Whereas Dave's approach is I'm going to have six, because that's a full team. And those six are the six that are going to be leveled, and everybody else is going to be whatever level I caught them at. So, but
nice.
Anyway, so that's that. That's my experience so far playing Pokemon Sword. For more adventures about that, you can look at my Twitter. I post screen caps. So
nice.
Yep. Any questions about that? It's a Pokemon game.
No questions. So here,
what's your guys' favorite Pokemon?
I already answered that question.
Yeah,
so I was thinking of a similar question in my mind of what's the dream team that you have if you for your six, and mine would be the original three: Pikachu, Abra, and Gyarados. Whatever order or whatever evolution they're at.
Yeah,
in terms of designs, my favorite design on a Pokemon is from Pokemon Silver, Sudowoodo. It's the rock Pokemon that pretends to be a tree. I just think that's a really cool design. And the original 150, it's hard to say. I think Oddish is extremely cute.
I named Oddish 420.
Yeah. How about you, David?
I think mine would probably be Farfetch'd.
Oh, Farfetch'd is good. Yeah. Okay.
Especially the fact that apparently in certain versions, instead of having the little Beedum leak, he's got a leak like Odachi or whatever the giant samurai swords are called.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah, what else have you been playing, Joel?
I have one more game to talk about. It's called We the Revolution.
This is the one I was curious about.
Yeah, so it was released in March of 2019 by Polyslash. It is a political sim where you play here's another one of those sims that I never do, except I'm doing them now, guys.
I'm into it. It's good.
Nova News in this one, man. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, anyway, you play a judge of the French Revolutionary Tribunal in the late 18th century, and you are an alcoholic and a gambler, and you have a precarious relationship with your family, like your wife and your kids, and also your father. You preside over court proceedings, hearing evidence and asking questions to sway the jury, making judgments that either enamor you to the people or to the revolution. And you also have interactions with politicians, colleagues, and your family. Mm-hmm. There are also randomized in-game events, so no two playthroughs are the same. So there's random things that pop up and happen in addition to the main events. So an example would be your son gets into a fight with a neighbor kid, and this is because of your drinking, because the neighbor kid was picking on your son about being the son of a drunkard. And you can talk to the parents and take responsibility because, like, your son bloodied the other kid's nose. You can intimidate the parents or you can blow them off. And all of this affects your son and your family, as well as your social standing and how people react to you in general. Nothing that happens in this game exists in isolation. Everything affects everything. Your decisions in court will affect your family's feelings about you and everything, and of course how you're reacted to on the street and so on. So you interact at home, in the court, on the street, in parlors and gambling dens if you go out with your politician cronies. And eventually you can apparently command battles and also address crowds, like, say, for example, if you decide that somebody needs to die for what they've done after the guillotine is pulled out, before you pull the rope, you can address the crowd and talk to the crowd about it. You can build monuments eventually. I haven't gotten to that, or and take territory. I haven't seen any of that happen. But yeah, you can do all these different things. So there's, like, some risk elements to it. There's, like, political sim stuff. There's, you know, relationship stuff you got to have. There's a lot going on in this game.
This and sounds that's why amazing. I say,
like, it, there's a lot to it, and so, like, because it's so broad, my main concern, because I haven't gotten far enough in it to make, like, a real judgment call about how well it does anything, but my main concern is that being as broad as it is and doing as many things as it is and hitting as many genres as it is, I don't know if that will compromise, you know, how any of those mechanics play out, or, you know, it's obviously going to compromise the depth to which you can sink into anything in particular. Like, say, for example, when you are presiding over a trial, you have, like, one page of case notes, and there's a mini game that you do. It's basically taking information from the case notes and doing kind of like a matchup categorization game where you're trying to figure out what piece of information is evidence versus the chronology of events or whatever. And then there are also red herrings in there that can throw you off and block you from being able to ask questions. Mm-hmm. You only have so many questions you can ask, and some of them will lean the jury one way or the other, for or against the person that you're judging. Mm-hmm. So, but, like, you can't come up with any new questions. You aren't presented with any more information. You have the guy in front of you, and then you've got, maybe, if you're lucky, a witness or two.
Yeah.
And that's it. Like, you would just have to make the call on that information. You can't deliberate over it and uncover a lot, you know, like in a Phoenix Wright crazy thorough kind of way. It's not that kind of a depth.
Right, right. I love making choices with incomplete information.
Yeah,
having a vengeful kid come back, stick me with a knife.
Well, Dad, burn it cold. This is your game. So this game measures progress in terms of days, and as you might imagine from what I'm telling you, a lot can happen in a day, because not only do things happen on your way to the courthouse or once you get there, but before court is in session, but then right afterwards, even in the middle of court, sometimes some of the events, the random events, will pop up and you have to reply to those. And then on your way home, stuff will happen. And then when you're with your family, you have conversations at dinner. Sometimes you have guests over, and then you get to pick how you want to spend your time in the evening. If you want to go out with your cronies to the gambling den, which gets you more political clout and, you know, gives favor with the revolution, or do you want to go home with your family and actually spend time with your kids, you know? And, like, even when you're at home, what you decide to do with your time isn't pleasing to everyone. You can't please everybody in your family with whatever you're doing. Like, there's no way to make everybody happy. Your father's opinion of what you should be doing with your time is going to be vastly different than what your son or your wife wants.
Right. You know?
So let's see, what else can I say about it? I've not gotten to the point where you get to this, but there is a risk. I've seen it because I've looked it up on my research for the show. There's kind of like a risk style map screen where you can move agent pieces around different districts of Paris to try and gain support. And also there are things called intrigues, which is a face-off between yourself and a political rival that will last several days and influence everything that's going on as well. There's a lot of things that it will happen, like say with the intrigue or with taking over parts of Paris, that you're still working on those elements after you've spent time with your family in the evening. You're still doing stuff. Mm-hmm. So like, that's why I say like the days can last a very, very long time. I've only played a handful of days so far because it just takes quite a while to get through each one. And there's just a lot. Right at first, there's a lot of sorting out to do to try to figure out the mechanics and you know, kind of get a groove with it.
Yeah.
So the art style is also notable. It's kind of a blocky polygonal look mixed with like inspiration of neoclassical art from the revolutionary era. So it's kind of a resource management, role-playing, turn-based strategy, political sim.
Yes.
And even though it's a slow-moving game, it definitely gives you the feel of the tumultuous times of the revolution. Even if the overall execution is kind of super ambitious for all the different things that you've got your hand in.
Yeah.
Since I haven't finished the game, I can basically only present to you the little bit of information about, you know, what I've seen of it so far and what I've checked online to see, you know, further, like what else expands out in this, game. I was playing this and I was deep into it, you know, like deep into like day three or some four or something, and then like I got Pokemon and I just sunk into a Pokemon hole. So like, you can blame Pokemon for that, but that's my introduction to We the Revolution. So if any of that stuff sounds interesting to you, so far my time that I've spent with it has been pretty good. It's interesting. There's a lot of moving parts. So you have to have like an attention span for all the moving parts. And it probably is not something you can just kind of pick up and play a little bit and put down, you know, like, because it's got so much going on that, and it takes a while that you would have to sit down for like a session, you know.
I'm looking at the game company on Steam right now. They look really interesting. They made an alchemist game and they have a mech and a tribe simulator game coming out in the next year or two.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Pretty prolific.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm really curious. Like, all of those sound cool to me. In addition, yeah. Also, I like on Google, it says that on Steam, the price is typically $18.14, which is really funny.
Nice.
the year 1814, the year that the French Revolution ended.
Nice. So, but yeah, like it was on sale on Switch recently because of the Black Friday sale. And it was like ridiculously marked down. I think it was maybe $5. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It was very cheap. So like, I caught it on a real good sale. So if you guys wish list it, it will drop in price down to something like that as well.
Nice.
But anyway, that's all I got.
We the Revolution.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. I've got one that's going to be real quick. I've mostly been doing work stuff when it comes to playing games, and also just doing work. The one thing that I have been playing just for me is I pulled the trigger and I got Rock Band 4 on the Xbox One, playing on my Xbox Series X. And boy, oh boy, is it Rock Band. Is like, it? Yeah, there's not an awful lot about it that is different. But it's Rock Band's on a modern system. I picked up a little adapter a long time ago. Apparently they're very expensive now. But you just plug it into your modern system and it will let you plug, it'll let you connect your old instruments, like even non-Rock Band instruments, like my regular guitar, wireless guitar, is one from like a later Guitar Hero game, and it picked it up just fine. But yeah, like the process of downloading all of my old DLC and getting that mixed in with the new library and stuff, and just kind of like settling around and realizing that, boy, I have lost a lot of my skill at playing this since the last time I played Rock Band very seriously, which was many years ago when we covered it on Watch Out for Fireballs. But yeah, it's a nice little nostalgic, it's a nice little nostalgic trip to go and play some of these older songs and to check out some of the new stuff. The character customization stuff is not as like robust as I remember it being, but that's not necessarily a huge thing for me. The tour mode is about how I remember it being. Like, you're making little trade-offs as your band moves around from map to map. Trying to pick, like, okay, do I want to go to this venue and play this set of songs, or go to this venue and play this set of songs, stuff like that. But, you know, in general, the campaign is, you know, making money and making fans, and sometimes those two things are at odds. But most of my time has just been spent like picking songs from the quick playlist and just having fun. So
that sounds like how you can make that game interesting is turn it into an RPG of like where you sell out, you know, and
yeah,
like how to manage that.
There's always been a little bit of that, but the consequences of messing up have never been terrible. Mm-hmm. You know, like, it never takes stuff away from you, really. It just makes it so that, like, it's, you have to do more before you advance to the next level. They, like, mm-hmm. there's an attempt to use the campaign to gate the difficulty of the level of songs. So, like, you can select from a pool of songs from, like, up to this level of difficulty, which mm-hmm. I think is, you know, ideally it would be a way to introduce you to new songs and like get you up to speed with playing with playing an instrument. However, when you have the size of DLC library that I have, like, there's really no reason not to play a song that you already know and like. Mm-hmm. Also, like, looking at the set list of any of the rhythm games that have come out like post 2010, or post Rock Band 3, really has like really highlighted how much my taste in music has stagnated, which is fine and okay. Like, but it's like, I don't know who any of these are. I don't recognize any of these.
They still have My God Is the Sun by Queens of the Stone Age.
Yeah, no. And that's fun. It's especially fun on drums, but, it's a process.
I have a question about this, because I know the piano is in Rock Band 3, correct?
Yeah.
Does this feature that, or did they nix it?
They nixed it. They nixed it, I think, in favor of making it a little bit more simple, which mm-hmm. seems wise to me, because, like, doing pro tracking for every piano and, like, picking songs that have, like, good keyboard parts, I think was, like, probably tougher than they wanted it to be. So I think mm-hmm. that by not having the keyboard, they felt it seems like they felt a little bit more unencumbered to pick different kinds of songs than needing, you know, than anything needing a keyboard would, which is a bummer, but understandable. But yeah, it's like, it's super cool to have a system that I can play Rock Band on. Like, I didn't want to get an Xbox One, but also I didn't want to get Rock Band 4 on the PlayStation 4, because I would have to get new instruments and I would also lose my entire DLC collection. But now I can use the same instruments and I can use the same DLC. So Yahtzee, I like probably won't always have the drums set up because it takes up a lot of room in the living room. and, you know, the cat seemed to be pretty wigged out by the noise, but it's
that justifies itself.
Well, yeah, but it's fun. It's Rock Band. Rhythm games are good. I'm angry that they went away. I think that, like, it, you know, I want to blame stores for, like, not wanting to stock the plastic instruments, because I can't accept a reality where this was just a fad that everybody got over, because it's still good, you guys. Like, you know, I'll be here clinging to something that I loved a long time ago. So, yeah.
I was going to say something, but now I completely forget. Never mind.
Yeah. But that's it. That's all I got is Rock Band 4.
Oh, cool. I think it's funny that at any new console, it's more financially feasible for you to just buy a new console than to try and buy an entire new library for a different console than the one you have.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I was already, like, really invested. Hundreds and hundreds of songs, and, like, even, like, export licenses from the older games. Like, you can't, you know, like, you can't take the codes that you had from the older Rock Band games and use those. Like, the licenses expired. So, like, if I wanted to get songs from Rock Band 1 into, you know, the game, I wouldn't be able to do that because they're just not available for you anymore. So,
and that is why we have piracy.
Well, you know, so it's there are, like, freeware fan developed Rock Band Guitar Hero clones available on PC, but I don't know, that seems fiddly. I like having my Xbox One. So
sweet.
Yeah. Let's see. David, how about you?
Not a whole heck of a lot. I've been continuing on with Neo. So been experimenting. I got the DLC, which unlocks the ability to use fist weapons, which is kind of interesting. Their whole thing is most of the abilities, or most of the other weapons, have a, you know, set combo that doesn't loop, you know, just like in Dark Souls, whereas the fist weapons, all of their abilities can loop indefinitely, and all of the active abilities can loop into each other, and you basically get a damage buff that scales with how many different abilities you've used since last stopping, so it more or less implements like a combo system.
Oh, fun.
So yeah, so I am incredibly bad at it, but it is a thing that I will probably at some point watch people online who aren't bad at it do awesome things.
How does that play with like the stamina drain system?
So that's the other thing that I'm trying to learn is they have a ability called Flux, where basically if you use your key pulse to, you know, regenerate your ki, your stamina, and then immediately switch to a different stance, you'll actually get even more stamina back, to the point where you can actually regain more stamina after a combo than you spent on the combo.
Okay.
And so if you can juggle the keys, you can basically just keep attacking indefinitely. I'm kind of mixed on it. Like, I like the idea of them adding, you know, more sophistication to the system, but it just seems almost purely fiddly, especially considering that for many of the weapons, your moveset can differ dramatically based on what stance you're in. So, for example, for most weapons, maybe all of them, you can only parry in one of the stances.
Oh.
You know, similarly, like, I use the Tonfas the most often, and they are basically, you have dramatically more iframes when you're in the lowest stance with them. So my understanding is that people that get real good will, like, learn to actually switch stances before they dodge, that sort of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't know. I'm a big proponent of... I judge games, you know, difficulty and complexity and stuff of that, like that, based on the degree to which they actually teach you and enable you to use those features. And at least so far, there doesn't seem to be any degree to which they make those accessible.
Yes, I am not surprised by this. Given how you described the game last week.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like a game that you would need that, like, any documentation that exists is primarily from the wiki. And maybe that information from the wiki is pulled from, like, a really, like, hyper-specific strategy guide that was published somewhere.
Right. Well, I think the biggest thing is it's not even just knowing about it. It's even being able to physically do it.
Right, yeah.
You know, they do a pretty good job of teaching you, like I said, the key pulse, you know, those sorts of things. Like, those are pretty accessible. Anything after that is kind of suspect.
Yeah.
But let's see. Other than that, so I just posted a picture into the Slack. I met a character. There is definitely, like, Jason Momoa can be your sidekick in this game.
What is this character?
So basically, in one of the levels, like, one of the factions that allies with you is a faction of good yokai. Okay. And it's led by a dude who is a half kappa, who is...
What does that mean?
So, like, kappas are little turtle water demons in Japanese folklore that drown people.
Oh, tight.
Yeah. They have a bowl of water on their head so they don't get dehydrated when they're walking on land. So the way you... defeat them is to bow to them, because they're very, very polite, and they'll bow back and spill their water.
Mm-hmm. Like, in the original Neo, the Kappa were like the crystal lizards. Like, they were the super elusive enemy that you had to do, like, you had to do a gesture at them to get them to die, and they would drop treasure.
Yeah, I've confirmed that in this one, at least, bowing does not work.
Okay.
They just kill you.
Yeah, but, and if they snuck up on you, they would reach into your abdomen, which is another part of the myth.
There's
something about your soul being up there, but yeah. Yep. But he is a half kappa, which is strange.
Yeah, so your character, one of the new lore things is that there's people running around that are half demons, including your character, that allows them to basically, you know, use, I don't know, magical abilities and whatever else the plot needs it to mean at that present time.
Okay.
For this character, it apparently just means... For at least as far as I can tell, he can swim really, really well.
Okay.
But yeah, just a I don't know, just kind of entertaining character. You know, continuing on with just the game being super, super silly.
Yeah, I'm happy that they can lean into that, because, like, Neo 1 was most entertaining when it was being frivolous, let's say.
Yeah. It's they definitely lean pretty hard into that. I think my favorite so far, Guardian Spirit you can get, is just like a goat that's, you know, just like the stereotypical, like, wise old man, like, just running around giving you random advice.
Mm-hmm.
Similarly, they add a feature that's kind of interesting. As you collect the souls of the various monsters you fight and complete missions, you actually start learning the yokai language, and so you can understand what the various like enemies and stuff like that are saying to you.
Hmm.
And most of it is just, you know, kind of, you know, blah blah, evil, eat, claw, bad, you know, that sort of stuff. But some of it's fairly funny. So, like, for example, when you pet a Scampus, the little cat things, they can, oh, it's cuddly wuddly time again.
Yeah.
Weird stuff. So yeah, so definitely a very silly game on top of, you know, when it's not trying to be Ninja Gaiden.
Yeah. Man, one of the best like books that I've gotten and flipped around in recent years has been just like a couple of like reference books on yokai.
Mm-hmm.
You can get, like, I got one on Kindle and I got one just a physical book to have around, just, you know, as just a regular like bestiary. They have like good, just folk that like the Japanese folklore has amazing monster design in it.
Yeah, I like, there's a lot of them that are really interesting that are like, yo, I know the, yo, yeah, it's a monster, but it's, you know, a vaguely civilized monster. Therefore, obviously it wears a kimono.
Yeah, of course.
And so you'll have like, you know, I know, some sort of dog demon that's just running around dressed like a proper Japanese gentleman.
Yeah, of course. What kind of boss fights have you gotten into? Because I remember Neo 1 being mostly like duels. A lot of them were like duels. But this one sounds like it probably gets a little bit more outlandish.
Yeah, so it seems like about half and half, duels and, you know, like giant monster fights. There's actually an interesting one that Dora just had that is basically, you're fighting another shiftling, so it's someone who has all the same abilities that you have.
Okay.
So they can, you know, transform into demon form, they can you know, summon their guardian spirit, you know, those sorts of things. So that's kind of interesting. I think probably my favorite is there's a yokai that is a weasel that has like katana attached to its arms and just like can control the wind, and so, you know, goes around chopping down trees and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's very much the anime, like all anime fight scenes hate trees. It's just cool. And there's a really cool boss fight with that, where, you know, you're in a forest and so you're fighting this thing, and it'll, you know, be like ricocheting off of trees and, you know, chopping trees down to get to you and things like that.
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah, a lot of good stuff. I think one of the interesting things is, you know, if I think of like the Soulsborne games, there's a couple of, you know, there's a number of, I don't know, I'd almost say like classes of enemies. So like, you know, like the, you know, dual encounters with like the, you know, Black Knights, those sorts of things, you know, the random zombies, those sorts of things.
Yeah.
The thing that Neo has a good deal of that I don't recall from the other Soulsborne games I've fought is kind of the mid-size enemies, you know, not big enough to be full-on bosses, but also too big for you to, you know, just do the normal like shield and duel type of thing.
Yeah,
I mean, I guess you have that some with like some of the giants, things like that.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, there's a lot of really good enemy designs in this that are kind of more of that sort of gameplay.
Nice. Yeah, I mean, the subject matter and like the aesthetic stuff of this sound really interesting to me, but I'm just really intimidated by the complexity of the play that you're outlining.
Yeah, yeah. It's, yeah, I mean, the good thing is you definitely don't need all of this. and the game really does not stop you from cheesing
at all. Yeah.
You know, so like I've been experimenting some with the ninjutsu stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so I now just can equip like a crap ton of shurikens and stuff like that. And so if I want to, I can just, you know, any given enemy, I can pretty much cheese down.
Yeah.
But yeah, it definitely, if you want to play quote unquote optimally, it's very high skill ceiling.
Yeah, well, I don't. So that's good. Nice. You played anything else?
Yep, that's it.
Cool. Ben, how about you?
Well, we're going to end this segment with a whimper, not with a bang. I've only just played like regular multiplayer games that I typically play. I will talk a little bit about Raft, maybe, because I've continued to play that. One difference being is I played a multiplayer game of it with some friends back from Cincinnati.
Oh, cool.
And they started their own world, and I hopped into it like an hour or two into it. And they did not do a peaceful run through, so the shark is alive and well and very bitey. So that definitely like slows down the progress in the first part of the game, because you can kind of beeline for certain tech if you're doing a peaceful run through, mm-hmm. which you have like no way of doing with the shark run through. The one thing that really sucks is like there's one thing you can build on your raft, which are these like net catchers, which will just pick up items that are floating in the ocean if you swim over them or float over them.
Yeah.
So that's like really good early tech. You just make a giant line of it on the back of your raft, and then that'll just pick up resources.
Nice.
With the shark, it'll bite off corners of your boat. And so if you have it on the edge, it'll just bite it off and you have to remake it, which is a pain. Mm-hmm. So you have to do a little bit more work and like embed it in the middle of your boat somehow and then finagle it that way. But it's still a lot of fun. If you go down in the game, a teammate can pick you up and bring you back to the raft and put you on a bed and like revive you. So that's kind of cool. Yeah. And it's just fun to see other people play the game and like kind of see what techs they go after.
Yeah. In multiplayer, does everybody have their own raft, or are you all manning the same raft and like
same raft?
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't know. There's like some fun gameplay with it. Like if you are above like kind of a resource rich thing, like you all dive down at the same time to try and distribute who the shark attacks, you know,
nice.
To just try and get a bunch of resources at once. So there's some fun like planning elements in the game like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not bad. And then I showed him the raft that I had. I have a sweet like Tower of Babel on my raft. I had done this on my friend's raft, and then I continued it on my own. But it's pretty fun to see, because you like it takes like maybe 30 seconds to a minute to climb to the top of it, and like you can still see like it's above any of the high points of the game. Like it's above like this like big island that I'm near, and you can still like see the rendering of the boat, but like you can see the like faders start to kick in. So I'm very curious to see like what's the limit, like how high you can go. Yeah. That's very rewarding, though, that they allow that sort of thing. So, yeah.
So can you, like, off the shark, or is it just, like,
indefinitely? You can. There's a, you get a tech that's a spear, and you can get you can get better spears if you want later down the line. But, yeah, you poke it to death, you get some shark steaks, and it leaves you alone for a little bit, but then another shark will come by in like 5 minutes or so. So you only have a limited time to take advantage of the sharkless waters, or you just play on peaceful, either way.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah. So I've gotten to the second like chapter, I think, which is like I think they've done two different chapter additions to the game. And it seems okay. I'm going to spoil the game a little bit.
Yeah, it's fine. Go.
You can get zip lines. So that's like a mechanic you can get. So
maybe
that's cool if you have a giant like mansion raft that you can zip line from place to place.
That sounds great.
Yep. Second, it's pretty cool. That could be a contender for a good group game to play.
Ooh, yeah. Nice. Did you have anything else?
No, just like Deep Rock Galactic and Rocket League, but I'm not going to talk about it.
Cool.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. Jala, What is the question that you ask the nice people?
Well, since Dennis is out this week due to the birth of baby Furia number 3, I thought that whatever he's playing right now, he will relate to his new baby's birth. So my question was, what game do you relate to an important event in your life?
Yeah, and I will start here with David's response. He says, Puzzle and Dragons Z and Mario Puzzle and Dragons on the 3DS. It was the first game my daughter started playing on her own. Watching her go from haphazardly spinning the orbs around the screen to planning her moves and making combos has warmed my gamer dad heart.
Oh,
nice. I'm not aware of what Puzzle and Dragons is. Has anybody else played that?
It's a mobile game that's gotcha. Like, I had two coworkers at Konami who sunk like thousands of dollars into it. So it's like one of those types of games.
Gotcha. Yeah. Huh. I'm curious, but it's that is a heartwarming story. Let's see here. Ben, what does Greg say?
Greg says, the SNES was the first major purchase that I did with my own money. Hmm. I bought the system with Super Mario World for $180 and Final Fantasy IV for $70 in early December 1991. It's crazy that those prices for games haven't changed since then. when it was new and I was only 15. To this day, Final Fantasy IV is the most expensive game I bought. Totally worth it, though.
Yep.
And I drove with my dad to get it with my brand new learner's permit. I turned 16 on February 26th. Those events are always connected to me as a rite of passage from childhood to early adulthood. And just how expensive gaming really was. I'm glad that it's not as pricey now. Steam has really spoiled me.
Nice. Yeah, I don't know. I've got a bunch of stories like that, but for the SNES, like, that was just a system that my dad got for us, and like, we spent the entire weekend, like, he got it as a surprise, and we spent the entire weekend playing it at my cousin's. It was a good time. Man, childhood was good. let's see here, David, what does Tyrus say?
Tyrus says, my son was born at the very end of 2019, and during the very early days, when he was generally immobile, I would cradle him in my arms and we would play Assassin's Creed Odyssey all through the night when it wasn't my hour to sleep. I will always relate that game to staying up with my newborn.
No. And it was educational. It's, you know, about the classics.
Yeah. Like how Pythagoras lives in Atlantis and has magical powers, right?
Yeah. Everybody has to learn about that eventually. So... Mm-hmm. let's see here. And then Jala, read our last one here from Dave.
Dave says, I'd say one game that sticks in my mind would be Final Fantasy VIII. It released around the end of high school graduation, and I distinctly recall putting a lot of time into it over the summer as I started my first job and began college in the fall. It felt significant at the time as it was one of the last Final Fantasy games where I could relate to the main characters given the similar circumstances of graduation and moving into a new sort of life adventure.
Hmm. I also distinctly remember where I was when I got Final Fantasy VIII. Yeah.
This is an interesting question because I hadn't really noticed this before, but like all the great games that I feel like I played, like they're kind of like thumbprints of like where you were at that time, you know? And it's like, I don't know. That's cool.
Yeah. I mean, I've been thinking about that because I've been going through a lot of my old mementos and, you know, moving stuff onto new shelves that I got from my living room. And like, I was looking at all of it like, oh yeah, like I can tell you a story associated with that. I know where I was when I played that. I know X, Y, and Z. And like, not all of them are good. Like, I can tell you some games that I associate with grieving and being terrified for, you know, family medical reasons and stuff. But I don't know. I'll do one. Shadow of the Colossus, even though I played a little bit of that before I jumped into it with you guys, with the Cincinnati folks, but no, I always associate with Shadow of the Colossus with moving out of the house and being in the dorms and playing through it, doing handing it off with Ben and Ben, you're there, and David, you were around, and Dennis was around. Yeah, no, that was a good time.
I thought you were doing like an audio check. Like, am I here right now?
No. Yeah, it was just a fun like group activity, passing controller back and forth and playing Shadow of the Colossus as like an early kind of bonding thing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's appropriate, you know. It's a game about leaving your home and doing horrible, irresponsible things.
Yeah. But yeah, that'll be my answer. How about you, Ben?
Yeah, it's tough. I was thinking of Shadow of the, one of the ones in my mind, but I think I'll go with Halo because that kind of bridged the gap between like high school and college. Where it's like I played with a lot of like high school friends who do like weekend parties, like LAN parties and stuff like that. And then we literally like brought that to college, I think the first year or two, because I know I played with people when I was an RA the second year.
Mm-hmm.
So that was like a really good like way to bond with like new people and meet new people.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Nice. David, how about you?
For me, probably Warframe. I played that during a sequence where I'd kind of extended period of unemployment, and that was kind of my way of getting through it.
Yeah. Just a fun place to go and do tasks and feel productive. I get it.
Yep.
Yeah. How about you, Jala?
Well, I have a lot of different things that I can bring up. Like, if you're going to go with college, say, for example, I had Azure Dreams, Digimon Card Battle, and Morrowind, and I played all of those. And Azure Dreams and Digimon Card Battle, I played with my boyfriend of the time, and we used to just stay up and pass the controller back and forth. But Morrowind, I would stay up all night on my laptop playing that and like not get any sleep at all. Even though I worked full time and went to school full time, it was nightmarish.
Because it was Morrowind.
Like, yeah, it was Morrowind. I had to play it. So I mean, I could also say like when I had cancer the first time, I got sucked into a Plants vs. Zombies hole. And when I had spinal stenosis and I couldn't look down or to the side or move my arm or do anything fitness related or paint or anything, I played a lot of Skyrim. When I first moved to Houston, Lunar Eternal Blue came out, and that was like my main friend in the middle of all that, you know, shifting, and like my family was all split up and stuff. But the game that I will give for like my official answer is Guild Wars 2. And the reason why is because I'd been listening to Duck Feed since episode 1 of WoW. I was you guys' first piece of fan mail, but like, I didn't listen to Don't Tree. I started listening to the level at around, I want to say, episode 15 or something, and I listened to the backlog, and then I started, as I do, talking to everybody and having opinions about things. And then right about then, David started playing Guild Wars 2, and I was like, I have things to tell you. I can tell you. I will show you things in the game. I can hook you up. I've been playing since beta. You know, like I wasn't part of an active Guild Wars community, and all of that. That was working with developers even before the game released. So I was really into that game for a while, and so that's how I started co-oping with David, which ended up turning into David and Dennis. And then subbing in for Dennis when he got busy one time was how I ended up on the show. And then I just kind of stuck. Nice. And I don't know. I've been around ever since.
Yeah.
So that is why I am podcasting is Guild Wars. So.
Yeah. I don't know. I maybe it's something about the time of year, but yeah, this definitely got me sentimental.
Yeah.
Thank you everybody for writing in. If you would like to participate in these, go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast. Watch the prompts to go up on Monday afternoons. Thank you, Jala, for putting this one up.
The end boss.
Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games that are exciting to us. Jala, what's going on? What's this article that you posted?
Well, there's a new video game site in town, and it is called the Game UI Database, and it's all about, you guessed it, Game UI. It was created by Ed Coates, the senior UI artist at Double 11, who worked on the PS Vita version of Little Big Planet and the recently launched Minecraft Dungeons. This site was a pandemic project for him. He made it basically because he said the most frustrating part of his job is hunting for reference material when building something new when it comes to the UI. It's easy enough to find screenshots of games you are already aware of, but unless you have an intimate knowledge of every single game out there, discovering new sources of inspiration can be a challenge, he says. Right now, the site has 320 titles on the database so far, with filters for textures, patterns, and themes. Basically, just there as a reference tool for devs and anybody who is just, for whatever reason, very enamored of game UI. He says, UI design is a pretty misunderstood field in the games industry. Many studios haven't fully realized its transformative potential in their games. And I actually rather agree with that statement. That could really make or break your smooth use of the game overall. Yeah. So.
How many times do we talk about a game being poorly signaled and stuff like that? A lot of the times, it like just the information that you need, there is no place on the screen for it to go.
Yep.
Yeah. This is cool. I am really curious about this. I'm actually going to keep this bookmarked and poke around at it because whenever I do graphic design stuff for the network, oftentimes I am looking for reference, and this could be very useful actually when looking at info layouts and stuff. Nice. Yeah. I am happy to learn about this. My story is not something I'm excited about. This is actually a PSA. This has been a controversy here on Twitter, at least today, early on. And this seems like it's worth everybody knowing about. So Cyberpunk 2077 comes out this week. It will be out by the time you hear this. Lots of controversy about it, controversy about CD Projekt Red and, you know, certain things that the studio has done in the past and certain depictions. All of that discourse is out there, and there are smarter people than me who are talking about it. But something that I think you need to know about is that there are sequences in the game where elements of the screen in the world and in the interface will flash in such a way that is basically designed to trigger epileptic seizures. Like people who
You say designed, are you implying that it's intentional?
So intentional is probably a rough thing. That is probably a pretty hostile way to do it. There are people who are familiar with the way that seizures are epilepsy is diagnosed and triggered. That when I have, when this was kind of breaking, they were saying, yeah, this is specifically around a device that is used, like I think in the game when you jack in. To go into cyberspace or whatever. And they say it is modeled after and very similar to a device that is used to induce seizures in people in real life, like in medical situations. There are no options in the game to reduce this effect. And, you know, people are throwing around kind of awful lot of conclusions that I have no idea if there's, you know, too much evidence for it. But at the very least, this kind of shows that they did not at no point in testing were they like, huh, maybe these flashing lights are maybe a bit much. Most games in their EULAs, they have an epilepsy warning, but epilepsy is not a monolith. There are different triggers for different people. And this is apparently especially pretty rough among people who have already been testing. CD Projekt Red has responded and said, we're going to do our best to put an extra epilepsy warning on as we try to find an extra epilepsy warning into the game as we try to come up with a more permanent solution. But I think right now, as this all gets sorted out, it is important for anybody who is going to be playing the game to understand that this risk is here. You know, you may, you know, have dealt with seizures in the past. A lot of times seizures, when you find a new trigger, you may, you know, stumble across something that you didn't know about yourself medically. So just understand that this is out there, this is happening, and it's worth knowing and looking at more information about it. Yeah. Sucks. I really hope nobody gets hurt. Yeah, but let's
maybe they'll fix that in my story in the day one or day zero patch that they're releasing for the game.
Yeah, a whole 43 gigabytes. Hi.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, they were so nice in The Witcher, like the game, like they gave you a map, they gave you a bunch of stickers. Yeah. Cyberpunk, you buy the game and then they give you an entire another game to download before you play that game.
You know what they give you is the gift of anticipation. It's mm-hmm. It's, you know, I think that a lot of people, they sit down and I think I've got a new game and I want to start it, and that may not be best for them. They need to be in the right mind space. So, you know, depending, like if you're like me out here in a rural area, a 43 gigabyte download patch, you know, that'll probably take about an hour and a half, something like that. It's just good to know.
So the good thing is that you can do this ahead of time, the 43 gig one. They also have a day one that they're going to release, I think, the day the game comes out. But I don't know if that's like strictly enforced, like you need to download it or not. This is all kind of like a moot point because this is going to be coming out after the game's out, I guess. But you can like buy the game right now too before it comes out and like pre-install it on your whatever system you have.
Yeah.
They'll all be like unlocked at the right time. I don't know. I'm excited about this. It is kind of and the reason why they're doing all this too is, so I've been following like the reviews of the game. Like they all seem to be pretty favorable. The one consistent criticism of the game so far is that it's very buggy. And so apparently this is what that's kind of addressing, is a lot of the development they've been doing in the past few months is like bug fixes and stuff like that. Yeah. So that's part of what you're downloading in the day zero patch. And developers at studio said that that's not even going to be the final one. Like there's still going to be more even after the day one patch. So I don't know. Hopefully hopefully in whatever the finished copy of the game is, like they remove things like what you talked about.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
yeah.
Yeah.
It, I mean, the good thing is the games can change post release. That is an uncontroversial statement. Like things need to be made more accessible. Studios need to respond to feedback and stuff. So,
yeah. It's interesting. New pattern in video game releasing though, where it's like, oh, we're not going to stop development when we print the disc to this game. You guys got to keep working.
Yeah. Huh.
Yeah.
David, you got a story for us?
No, I do not.
Attaboy. How do y'all feel about bundling it up?
Buttons.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of The Level. We really appreciate you taking the time. Just as a reminder, once again, Duckstream is happening December 18th, 19th, and 20th. That is the next weekend after this episode comes out. So if you want to tune in, that is helpful. If you want to participate in chat, that is super helpful. And if you want to give, that is extremely helpful because it supports a good cause. The Transactive Gender Project out of Lewis and Clark University out in Portland. It'll be a good time. It always has been. We understand if you're not able to give because shit, man, everything.
2020.
Yeah, yep. 2020. But at the very least, we can hang out and have a good time. Other than that, there's all the usual stuff that you can do. We extend a congratulations to Dennis. We're looking forward to having him back on so we can talk about the experience as much as he wants to, but we wish him and his family the best. Otherwise, though, I've been Cole Ross. You can watch my streams on Twitch at DuckVTV.
I've been David Meyersmith.
I'm always Jalachan in places.
I've been Ben Merkel and will continue to be Ben Merkel.
Always. And stick around for some titles.
Well, you say that, but I don't have any titles.
Uh-oh. I don't have any titles either.
Uh-oh, David.
David, it's all you.
I've got no titles.
Okay.
Oh, well, no.
This is the episode with no name.
Yeah, I'll figure something out. Don't worry about it. Something will kick up when I'm editing.
The podcast with no name. Where did it come from?
Where did it go? Yeah. I'm not calling this episode Cotton Eye Joe. All right. Cool. Take care, everybody. I'm gonna go. I'm sleepy. It's been a long day.
It has been a long day.
Yeah.
Have a good week, everyone.
Yeah. You too. Bye.
See you guys
later.
Bye.
Bye.